some fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on the show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, Heather Dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Have you heard of the Belief Hole podcast? True tales of the inexplicable and the unknown.
Just a shadow of a man standing at the edge of my bed.
The next thing I know, there are two long metal rods coming at my head.
Join the Brothers of the Belief Hole as they explore the strange through deep research and sonic storytelling.
Large triangle-shaped something.
It was so freaky.
It looked like it was coming closer, like out of the forest.
I thought to myself, what on earth?
I do remember that bright light.
It looked at least 7-8 feet tall.
This thing staring at me.
I remember thinking to myself, what the hell is going on?
This thing was blacker than black.
Weird chanting.
Halfway through, it had stood up on its hind legs and walked the rest of the way.
Discover the Belief Hole podcast, available wherever you listen.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 318 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Woo! It's been a long weekend.
Has been.
Tracy, we like to start off every episode by thanking all of our military and civil servants all around the world that are part of our allied forces. Thanks to all of you guys, gals, and service animals for everything that you do for us every day.
Yes, you guys are a blessing, that's for sure. Keeping you in our prayers. Thank you for keeping us safe. And we pray that you guys get to come home soon.
And for those of you who already live here.
Yeah, those too. Yeah, we love all you guys. We just want you all to be close.
Anyways, as usual, we want to mention that this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp.com/hillbilly. Tracy, it's been a struggle for a lot of people recently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've seen people post stuff in the group that has been very heart-wrenching. Not naming any kind of names or anything because everybody knows their struggles that they're going through. This has been a week where I've been extremely glad that we have the group that can lend their voices to so many people who need help.
Of course, you guys have always come through just like we know you would. And we just want you to just know we are always there for you guys day or night. Please call us, get in the group. If you need to talk to somebody, somebody will be there for you all. There is a new hotline number. It's 988 if you guys want to call that as well. And you can also text at 741-741. But there's always somebody here for you guys, no matter what the situation. Just reach out.
Yeah, like I said, you can always reach out to us. We had the privilege to actually meet someone that we've been corresponding with for a while.
Yeah.
We're actually making a move to about an hour from us from Florida area. And we got a chance to actually meet and do lunch. And
Very nice.
It was a very nice situation. So.
Mm-hmm. Things are looking up.
Yes.
So.
Things are looking up. So, and when we first started corresponding, it didn't look like that way. But, you know, as I preach and preach and preach, keep your head up, give it time. It always gets better.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, Tracy. So we have a fun episode set up tonight. We are getting excited because the cruise is like 3 weeks away.
Oh, my gosh. I still can't believe it.
I know it. We still got so much stuff to do before then.
I know.
But I was digging around, and I found a story kind of by accident, and it was one of those that this is probably going to turn out, it might come across a little weird as far as not the normal pattern that I lay out a story.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found the story and I didn't dig enough into it. And I thought, hey, this is going to be a great story. So I already had my mind made up. This is what I was going to research. And then as I started researching it, there was some twists and turns. It was like, this isn't usually what I'll put in a story, but I'm going to put it in here. And when it was all said and done, I still think it's a great story, but it might just come across a little different. Does that make sense?
That makes absolute sense.
We also have Woody from Fright Chasers on. Now, Fright Chasers Woody. Is a cool podcast. It used to be called Hill City Paranormal. And Woody's been on the show before. It's been a while, probably maybe a year and a half or so. But he's got a story about a possible Bigfoot encounter that is really cool.
Oh, so boy.
We enjoyed that. And he's got a place up in his area that is a haunted location. He had a chance to get in there because he's a photographer. And he got a chance to go in there and take some pictures and stuff for a publication that was doing an article on the place.
Uh-huh.
And he had some occurrences there. This was a place he was aware of in the past, but he never had a chance to go
wow,
in.
Lucky.
So,
good
yeah.
for him.
So, anyways. Yeah, he's up in Virginia, so... He's invited us up in that area, and I told him if we go to Williamstown, we'll definitely go by his area because it's only a couple hours away.
There's a Williamstown, Virginia?
I meant Williamsburg.
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't know that.
Colonial Williamsburg. Oh. I'm sure there's a Williamstown everywhere. Oh. So,
but we'll That's very out. True.
All right. So let's get into the story. Tracy, I think most people have heard the term Cripple Creek.
Well, I know there's a good song out.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Most probably from the song by Robbie Robertson and the band.
The band.
Huh?
Wonder how long it took him to come up with that name.
I don't know, but it's pretty original because nobody else got it. They got it first.
Well, it's probably a good thing on their part, though. Yeah.
But Cripple Creek is a real place, and it has quite a haunted history. Oh. It's got quite a history, period.
No way.
But quite a haunted history. So let's talk a little bit about the town's history. In 1890, there was the discovery of gold at the base of Pike's Peak in Colorado. A year later, seeing the opportunity, Denver real estate firm Bennett and Meyer started work on an 80-acre township that they were going to call Fremont. The primary east and west streets were named after Bennett and Meyer. So The two main streets, Bennett Street and Meyer Street. The other streets were all named after prominent businessmen from the area. Now, right next to this town was the town of Cripple Creek, which was actually started in 1892, 2 years later. In February of 1893, the two towns united, and they took the name of Cripple Creek. Now, even though they took the name Cripple Creek, the other side of the town that was formerly Fremont actually was the side that seemed to flourish the most, at least a much quicker pace than the original Cripple Creek.
I wonder why.
Well, I think that's because on Bennett Street, several businesses were springing up. And I think it was just because of the people who lived there. I think it was just a whole different setup of that town. Started in, it was 2 years older.
Okay.
So that was probably part of it. On Meyer Street, well, there were some other things that sprung up. This became the most well-known red light district west of the Mississippi River.
Oh, that thing that sprung up.
Saloons and casinos would soon follow. And by the end of 1893, Cripple Creek had 3 bathhouses, 4 dance halls, 5 fraternal lodges, 6 bookstores, 9 hotels, 10 meat markets, 11 parlor houses, 24 grocers, 36 real estate agents, and 44 lawyers.
Well, it did boom right up there, didn't it?
And probably a partridge in a pear tree.
Dude, that's awesome.
Now, no longer a rough and rustic gold camp, Crystal Creek was now a city with a population that had soared from 500 to 10,000 in less than 3 years. Well, a lot of these gold towns boomed because everybody flocked there to try to get the gold.
Right.
And then the problem was once the gold was gone, most of the time everybody left.
Yeah.
So that you see that a lot over a 2-3-4 year period. Here's a fun fact for you. When it was all said and done, $500 million in gold would be extracted from the ground around Cripple Creek. $500 million.
After the people left?
No, this is just like when it, you know, from the start of the gold boom till it was done.
Amazing.
$500 million worth of gold ore. But the prospect that initially discovered the gold in the area, a gentleman by the name of Robert Miller Womack, died penniless in 1909.
Well, what in the world?
I mean, he didn't haul all the gold out by himself.
Well, of course he didn't, but still.
I don't know what happened. I mean, because he died, you know, 10 years later, 11, 12 years later.
Aww.
So I don't know what happened, but like many.
Sounds like you had a good time. That's what it sounds like.
Probably so.
All those daggone casinos and stuff.
Like any of the other mining towns, fortunes were made and they were lost in the blink of an eye. The city had some major issues during the Great Labor Strike of 1894. Now, you know, it's amazing, and I don't remember, and I wasn't even going to talk about it, so it's just I don't have the details. But Troy Taylor, on his podcast, he had a whole episode that we listened to on the way back the other night about the labor strike at the mine up in a place in Illinois.
Yeah.
It was so brutal. I mean, all these people were, I mean, shot, killed. I mean, these things were not for the faint of heart.
Right.
These weren't people walking around with picket signs. Mm-hmm. They were like literally hauling people out of the mine and shooting and killing them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was awful.
It wasn't going to be much different here.
No.
Not quite to that level, but I'm just saying it was pretty big. It got so violent that the governor was forced to call in the National Guard to protect, get this, the mine workers from the mine owners. Usually it's the quite it's opposite. Usually the mine workers, they're the ones pissed off.
Right.
And they're going off after the mine owners, which is what happened in that situation in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But this situation was different. It was the mine owners going after the miners. Anyway, the city would see more tragedy in April of 1896. There was two devastating fires 4 days apart. The first one leveled half of the city, and the second leveled the other half of the city.
Oh my gosh, there's no way. Who did that?
I mean, it was just, everything's built out of wood.
So, but somebody, did somebody start the fires?
Well, I mean,
that just seems a little
maybe Ryan
sketchy.
From The Office, Billy Joel, I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't think.
I mean, don't that seem a little sketchy?
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, I really don't know. It just depends. It could be, but might not be. Keep in mind, this is the Wild West. And like most of these mining and gold, silver mining towns, they have reports of hauntings, and you can see why.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of violence and death, either in the saloons or, hell, in the mines, for that matter.
Yeah.
Cripple Creek was no different. They've had their share of ghost stories. But mining towns also have another common lore, the Tommyknockers.
Oh.
So, Tracy, what exactly is a Tommyknocker?
I don't know.
That was the research I gave you to do for this. Now what?
You did not.
We've mentioned the Tommyknockers briefly in some other mining stories, but I don't think we ever really explained the origin of the Tommyknockers, so I felt like this would be a good opportunity.
I would like to know.
Like most lore, there are a few different variations and thoughts on the actual origins, but I'm going to give you the most popular ones. The first tales of the Tommyknockers came to America from English miners, more specifically the Cornish miners. The Tommyknockers supposedly stowed away in the miners' baggage. That's how they got here.
In their baggage? How does that happen?
Well, I mean, it's folklore, babe.
Oh.
So just who were the Tommyknockers? Well, that is up for debate. Some say that they were the spirits of miners who died on the job. Others think that somehow they are jealous earth spirits guarding the treasures from men. In a book called Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries from 1911, W.Y. Evans Wentz called them mine spirits. He saw them as benevolent spirits that were just there to warn the miners of impending dangers, yet others think that they are more practical joker types, more of a prankster, just having fun. There are several stories of Tommyknockers doing all of the above.
Hmm.
That's why it's all up for debate.
Gotcha.
There have been several reports of hearing knocking right before a mine collapse or an explosion.
Really?
Yes. And we covered some of that when we talked about the Huska tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
There were some people that claimed that they heard Tommyknockers and stuff like that during, you know, the time where they had some of the major events going on there. And since we brought up the Huska Tunnel, a big thank you to Dave Domi, because for our 6-year anniversary, he took a trip a couple hours from his house out to the Huska Tunnels and took a little video for us. And he's got a story to share with us in the upcoming weeks.
Thank you, Dave, for doing that. That was really awesome.
Paranormal that happened while he was there.
Oh, good.
He's planning on going back out there. But it was very cool to have somebody go shoot a video.
Yeah, it was very nice.
So big thanks to Dave.
Yeah, that was awesome.
All right, so there's also several reports of miners getting close to striking gold, only to hear the knocking, trying to lure them away. As if to, you know, almost like a leprechaun trying to keep you from finding this pot of gold.
Yeah.
So similar. So some people in this case say the they don't want you to find gold, so they try to trick you into leaving the spot where you're about to find it.
Oh, that way they can just come in there after you've done all the work and get the gold themselves.
Well, I don't know what they're going to do with the gold. They're spirits.
Oh, that's true.
But it, go use it at the ghost club. So anyways, if they do strike gold, despite the Tommyknocker's efforts, the gold would be gone the moment that the miners turned their back.
Wouldn't that just pee you off?
Sometimes tools would be misplaced, or the equipment would just break down. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and that's very... I would be so mad.
You would never strike gold while the Tommyknockers were around. At least, that's what was thought. But that was not the experience of local legend of Cripple Creek, Jaunce Barbee. He was able to outsmart the Tommyknockers.
Oh, let's hear about that.
Even though his every instinct told him that he was sitting on a fortune, there were days where he obviously had his doubts.
Yeah.
But he had an idea. He had grown desperate, knowing that the gold was there, and he almost hit it time and time again. But then he would somehow lose the scent. He just couldn't figure it out. Then it occurred to him that maybe if he changed the name of the mine, his luck would change too. Just maybe the Tommyknockers would be lost or maybe confused if the mine had a different name.
Who in the world thought of that?
I just
Except
told
he
you.
Did. I understand. Jaunce Barbee. I mean, I know, but...
He chose to call it Cripple Creek Columbia, and then he swore himself to secrecy so the Tommyknockers wouldn't be tipped off.
So he's the only one that he didn't tell nobody.
No, and he had to make sure that he swore himself to secrecy so he wouldn't screw up and say it out loud or something.
And they bought it?
Well, the next day he struck gold.
Stop.
So you tell me.
Oh, you're serious?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I wouldn't lie about something like that.
Well, then he's a genius. Daggone it.
Tracy, Cripple Creek has never been a ghost town, per se, because it was never abandoned. It did have a bunch of places, though, start to fall in disrepair over the years.
No, I'm sure.
You can imagine these original buildings built in the 1890s
out of
basic wood and what have you. They take their, nature takes their toll on them. The unused mines kind of clung to the countryside like rotting teeth. They were all fenced off with danger signs, do not enter signs. Even the cemetery, Mount Pisgah Cemetery.
That's the name where my mommy and daddy are buried.
Yeah.
Aww.
It had fallen into disrepair. And obviously, Mount Pisgah is from the Bible.
Yeah.
So it's not a, there's not a mount around there that it was named after. It was named from biblical times. That cemetery was started back in 1892, but by the early 1990s, grave markers had been lost and damaged. Weeds and trees were growing up through some of the actual graves. The whole town, including the cemetery, though, was refurbished in the early 1990s.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Took them that long, though.
Yeah. And Cripple Creek isn't exactly easy to get to, either. The railroad used to actually go back there, but it's long since been gone and closed down. That means you have to pretty much take Gold Camp Road. And Gold Camp Road does not have a good reputation. First of all, it's a windy mountain road between two smaller towns. And wrecks there are pretty commonplace with cars. Lots of injuries. There's a couple of tunnels along that way. Tragedies there also. Several workers died during their construction. It's said that spirits can still be heard in the tunnels. And in one case, there was a school bus that crashed in the tunnel, causing the roof to crash down on the occupants.
Oh, no.
Some say that after leaving the tunnel, you might notice tiny handprints on the back of your car.
Oh, that's awful.
A claim to fame that Cripple Creek once held was not really a good one. Cripple Creek boasted one homicide for every day of the year.
Every single day?
Every single day.
Dude, get another hobby, somebody.
How fun is that?
Oh, that's not cool.
So with all the bad history that we've discussed, does it surprise you in any way, shape, or form that some have called Cripple Creek the most haunted city in all of Colorado?
No, it doesn't. That's a sad situation.
It is. So let's talk a little bit about some of the paranormal stuff. Before it became the Colorado Grand Casino and Maggie's Restaurant, the three-story brick building at 300 East Bennett was the old Fairley Brothers and Lampman building. It hosted masons, lawyers, pharmacists, and engineers. The Fairley Brothers, that the place was named after, were morticians.
No kidding.
Yes. They operated out of the basement of the building.
Oh, wait. All that was in one building?
Yes.
Oh.
It was a three-story building, so they didn't need all of it.
I'm not down with that. Mm-mm.
Across the top floor of the building was once a ballroom. So how about that? You had a ballroom on top and a mortuary at the bottom.
No. That's an odd combination.
That's making the most of of a building.
I mean, I guess so. So the dead didn't have far to go if they wanted to dance a jig, huh?
That's like a time where we went to Lexington, Indiana, and there was a restaurant / hardware store.
Oh, yeah.
Up on that floor, that top floor that used to be the ballroom, they say that the floor echoes with the sounds of dancing feet, clinking of glasses, and laughter at nighttime. There have been several sightings of mysterious blue lights that swirled down to the lower floors. The top floor is where you also have your best chance to encounter Maggie. Maggie was a stereotypical Gibson girl. You know what that is?
I have not a clue.
You know how they show pictures? A lot of times they'll be hand-drawn pictures from like the, 1890s, early 1900s, we'll say. And it's like the girls in the dress and their hair is like pinned up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's what they called a Gibson girl.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
That's what I do, Tracy. I educate.
Oh, yeah. Those girls were very beautiful.
Well, this girl was seen. Like I said, their hair was kind of wrapped and pinned on mm-hmm. top. And it was pretty stereotypical back then. But anyway, this girl is seen. She has a white ankle-length skirt on, her hair pinned up in a row. And Maggie used to actually turn on all the upstairs lights, they say, when no one was in the building. So much so that it aggravated local police, because even when the building was closed, they would get reports, hey, somebody's got the lights on, and the police were like, we're tired of checking it out. It's just Maggie. Sometimes you can actually smell Maggie's perfume wafting from room to room at the upstairs.
Maybe she was just doing it because she wanted some company from the police. You know, she's probably lonely.
Yeah, she probably shouldn't be, because she's also been spotted playing slots after hours.
Oh, that's my girl.
Sometimes she's seen with an unknown gentleman. The pair have even been captured on security cameras, but that footage always disappears once it's been viewed.
No kidding. Oh, wow.
So the old mortuary building is a casino now. The old hospital is a hotel. The St. Nicholas Hospital was opened by the Sisters of Mercy in 1894. By 1900, it was serving up to 55,000 of the people in the area. Now, they weren't all coming there, but there was 55,000 people in that general area mm-hmm. that would come there if they needed a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
The original hospital only lasted for 2 years because it was destroyed by the fire that we talked about earlier.
Oh.
Well, sort of. During the fire, as you can imagine, there's a big commotion.
Yes.
You've got all this town burning, people are running all over the place.
Yeah, especially a hospital.
Well, there was an anti-Catholic group called the American Protective Association, and one of their members decided this would be a good time to dynamite the hospitals because it was a Catholic hospital and Catholics weren't real popular in 1900 back then. It was mainly Protestants.
Are you kidding me?
The man, though... did actually more damage to himself than he did the hospital.
Good.
He merely dented the hospital kitchen, but he blew off one of his legs.
Oh, I mean, that's not funny.
It's probably ironic that he probably got treated there at the hospital.
At the hospital, see?
But the fire actually did take its toll on the hospital, and it was started at, the fire, believe it or not, was started at one of the brothels. I don't think it was on purpose, but that's where it started.
Mm-hmm.
But it spread, did damage to the hospital. Hospital was completely gutted. In 1898, St. Nicholas opened the new hospital.
What about the people in the hospital? Did they get out?
I don't know.
Why would you do that?
Because I don't even know how many people were in there at 19. I mean, it was obviously by 1900 is when it said it was seeing 5,500 people around or 55,000 people around. But this was a couple of years before, so it probably didn't have that big of a population inside the
hospital. Yeah, but even one person's too many.
I agree. The Sisters of Mercy sold the hospital and left Cripple Creek in 1924. It was then used as physicians' offices until it closed for good in 1977 and then was abandoned for two decades until its renovation in the 1990s. Even though it's a hotel now, there are plenty of the old hospital's nuns and staff hanging around. Visions of nuns have been seen drifting through the corridors, still conducting business as they did when they were alive. Tracy, even when the building was abandoned, people would see the nuns up in the window and they reported feeling of warmth and peace. There's another spirit here at the hospital. It's the spirit of a child. He goes by Petey. Supposedly he's very mischievous and he likes to hide people's cigarettes back at a time when you could still smoke in the building. There's also a ghost named Stinky.
No.
Now follow me on this. It's because it manifests in a back stairway as a disgusting odor. Sometimes the lower torsos and legs of an unnamed miner, apparently from a mining disaster, can be seen. Screams and cries are also heard as a reminder of how awful some of these injuries from the mining disasters were.
Hmm.
The section of the hospital that was once the mental ward is filled with gloom and shrieks and screams such as you would have heard during the time that it was used as a mental ward.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Then there's the Turf Club. That's on Bennett Street also. It was built in 1896. Now, it was a men's club that is now Buffalo Billy's.
And it's, that is?
I don't know.
Oh.
I didn't look it up. I think it's just a club.
Oh.
There's all kinds of casinos there now, though. Mm-hmm. So there's no telling. For a place that's supposedly so hard to get to and not that big, there's all kinds of casinos and stuff. So It's haunted by a little girl named Lily. Now, actually, it is a casino. Sorry, I forgot about the story. She's often seen on a staircase, and she's cradling her little rag doll. Sometimes, though, she's seen drawing on the walls. And she kind of stands back and admires her artwork.
Uh-huh.
But it always disappears right before anybody can take a picture of it.
Oh.
Plenty of people see it.
Yeah.
Nobody can get it a picture of it. Now, some of the visitors here lose sight of their small children while they're playing at the casino. That's why I remembered it was a casino.
Oh.
So I guess you could take your kids there.
Oh.
And let them roam around.
That's annoying.
I would think so. But once they find their kids again, after they've lost track and they find them, they're always told the same thing. The kids say that they were playing with their new friend, Lily.
Aw, that's kind of cool, though.
Then you've got the Old Palace Hotel. That's on Bennett Avenue. It's haunted by its former owner, Miss Kitty Chambers. Now, she died back in 1908. She supposedly is still folding down guest bedding and seeing to everyday demands of the establishment. Free labor is the best.
In it?
The former Collins Casino is now another casino, but it's said to be haunted by an Englishman by the name of George Long. Now, there's a story with George. He was supposedly murdered by his deranged teenage daughter, Alice. She hit him over the head with a cast iron skillet as he was coming down the stairs.
Yeah, that'll hurt.
George, he likes to flirt with the ladies a little bit, likes to flush the toilets And he likes to play on the slots as well. He should probably hook up with the other chick.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Supposedly, Alice, her story was that her parents actually kept her locked away in the bedroom. Her spirit is said to now kind of scratch on that door that would have been her bedroom door.
I'll never understand that. Never.
Well, I mean, if it was early 1900s and maybe she had some mental issues, that's unfortunately the way people would treat her. They became violent. They didn't know what else to do with them. They just lock them in a room. Mm-hmm. Not making it right, but that's... Yeah. They didn't know what else to do back then. There wasn't medicine and stuff they could take.
Yeah, I guess. Still sad.
And my favorite story, we're going to end on this. This happened at the Mamie R. Mine in 1894. A stranger appeared out of nowhere at the mine. The miners thought that it was a new employee. Why wouldn't it be? Why else would he be there? But this employee started to walk right towards an area where a dynamite blast was getting ready to go off. So they all start yelling frantically at him to stop, but he just kept walking. And then, boom. The miners all ran through the dust and the debris, only to find the miner covered in his own blood and gore. His arm had been blown completely off. As they reached for the miner, he completely disappeared amongst giggles from the Tommyknockers.
Yikes.
So anyway, that's your story on Cripple Creek.
Very interesting.
All right, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be back to tell you some cool stuff and have our interview with Woody from Fright Chasers. All right, real quick, I just wanted to mention that our last live event from the year, public live event, is the Bobby Mackey's. That is October 16th. That's a Sunday. If you're going to get your tickets, get them now because this one will sell out. It sells out every single year.
Yeah, but sure does.
So, and that's going to be your last chance to be able to catch us live for this year. All right. Tracy?
What?
What do you got going on over there as far as iTunes and stuff?
All right. This week we have A.E. Haley. 0661, Kurt in Ohio, that said we were boring.
He did.
Mojo Lobster, and Kay Cummins. Thank you guys for your reviews. You always come through for us every week, and we appreciate you so much.
And we had all three people last week claim their prizes.
Yeah, that was awesome. They've all been
shipped out, yep. So probably, some of you probably already have them. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need to do that again real soon.
Yeah, not today.
And our Patreons are Megan Peterson and Lorinda Bennett. Thank you guys for your support. We appreciate y'all so much. You guys, we couldn't do this without you all supporting us, leaving awesome reviews, and, you know, just hanging in there with us all these years. We can't thank you all enough.
No, definitely. In the 6 years we've been doing this, we've got some people that have been with us from the very beginning.
I know. And aren't we blessed? We're so blessed.
Absolutely.
I love each and every one of you guys. And Kurt, I even love you too, doll. But you guys are wonderful. And, you know, me and Jerry talk about it a lot that, you know, we are so happy and that we are totally blessed. And we have made so many new wonderful friends through the years. And we just couldn't be happier. So you guys are awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we literally get 170,000 listens a week.
And that's crazy.
And that's completely mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah.
As I started saying back in the very first episode that we did, I think maybe the second or third episode it was mentioned, that, but we were told if you can get 75 listens on an episode,
mm-hmm.
that was success.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was different back then also than what it is now. More people listen to podcasts and stuff.
Oh, sure.
But, I mean, we're getting 170,000 a week.
Look at you guys. You guys rock.
Yes. And there might be one of you listening to every one of those. And if you do, thank you for spending 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, we appreciate it. 170,000 listens, 4 listeners.
Oh.
But anyway, let's listen to Woody. You guys are going to like this story. This is really cool. Hey guys, you know, I always love it when we have return guests, and I've got Woody on from Fright Chasers, And Woody, you came on with us a couple of years ago. It was right about the time the pandemic was starting. And you had a bunch of stories from Lynchburg, but you guys were a different name back then. And it threw me for a loop when you reached out to me. And I was like, I know who Woody is, but I didn't remember the name Fright Chasers. Tell everybody what the original name of the show was, and they might refresh their memory of when they heard you a couple of years ago, I should say, on here.
That's right. That's right. Well, we used to be Hill City Paranormal, which I'm not saying we aren't, but as far as the podcast and logo and t-shirts and stuff like that, that we have around the area, the podcast just started kind of broadening, and I started talking about my love for 80s horror movies, slasher films, short filmmaking. And I needed a more broader term, because in my mind, it may not have been for anybody else, but in my mind, I was blurring the line between that and the paranormal, what paranormal teams actually do around here. They actually investigate and lead groups. And we do that for like a big event, like a venue for entertainment purposes, but not like the legitimate teams do. So Fright Chasers just came from that. It just came from, I just wanted a more entertaining, generic, broad name. But it still catches me, because all the other stuff, I mean, I've got a ton of stickers made with Hill City Paranormal. It still rolls off, you know? Yeah. But Fright Chasers, I'd done about a year and a half ago, I did an animated cartoon of the group. We did like an Adult Swim cartoon, because I own a video studio here in Lynchburg. And so we were like, I just want to have some fun. I want to make like an Adult Swim type of cartoon. And I called it Fright Chasers for some reason. I was like, I really like that name. It did one cartoon. It took a super long time, and I haven't done any since. But then about 2 months ago, I was like, I really like that name, and I don't want other paranormal groups getting upset at me. So let me do a quick change. Plus, I was in the mood to order some new merch. So it was a good time.
Any excuse to order new merch. We do that sometimes. We just come up with a new logo just because we want to get tired of looking at the same old ones we've had for a year and a half.
That's right. So that's exactly right.
Let's talk a little bit about, you guys have done a bunch of investigating in the Lynchburg area, but what I want to focus on today is, you were telling me about a Bigfoot. I'm not going to say experience, because it really wasn't a Bigfoot experience, but it does go along the lines of some Bigfoot evidence, we'll say. Tell me a little bit about that situation.
All right. So it's really funny, because that day was before, I'll say this. So let me say this before I get to that day. So my experience with Bigfoot shows is I love Bigfoot. I've always been team Bigfoot. I've always been kind of a skeptic. However, the shows kind of turned me off, because I thought they were all staged, right? Like, you know, people knocking on trees and stuff like that. So with that said, one Friday I woke up and it was raining outside, raining at the time. And I told my wife, I was like, hey, I found this cryptozoology museum in North Carolina, which was about 2.5 hours away from us. I was like, I really kind of just want to go see it. Something to do on a Friday. I don't have any work lined up. Let's go. And so we hop in the car, and I take a camera with me, because again, I try to take, I'm always video, and that's what I do. And then, so we go and visit the cryptozoology, a paranormal museum down in Littleton, North Carolina. Okay. So Steve, Barcello he's the head guy there. And I didn't know him or anything, but we go there, and it's at the time this museum was on the first level of his house. He had an old house, and he had like just a bunch of rooms, like set up really, really cool. Really had like a haunted doll, Bigfoot statue, footprints everywhere. It was everything I wanted it to be. Basically, like I wanted that experience on that day. Like I wanted a small museum that had just odd stuff. Like I was craving it. And so we get in there, and I have my camera, and I'm like, hey, Steve, can you just talk? Like nobody else was in there. It was just us. Tell me about some of the Bigfoot happenings or whatever in the area. And so he starts to tell me about how there's been a ton of sightings, ton of sightings at the local state park, Medoc State Park in North Carolina. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Or Medoc. And he started telling me about all the stories, and I was like, well, how far away is it? I would love to go. I was like, well, actually, I'll shut the museum down and let me just show y'all. Let me take y'all to where the sightings happened. And so you can imagine, like, my wife is like, what are we doing right now? And then I'm in my head, I'm like, this is the most amazing day ever. Yeah, like, this is just the coolest thing ever. this is heaven. So he packs up his Explorer, our expedition or whatever. And then we start following him, right? And I asked my wife, I was like, please video me. We're going to go down. We'll make a video of this. But we drive for 20 minutes. So already Littleton, North Carolina is in the middle of nowhere. It's not a lot going on. It's like a Hardee's in town. That's it. And then we go 20 minutes further deep into the woods. And then we go to the state park and we get there and you know, Steve, he starts showing us, he's like, hey, let's just take a walk down the trail. No one else is parked there. And that's important for later in the story. So no one else is at the gate or anything. There's no one around, but our two vehicles in this, you could see someone coming from, like, you know, 20 minutes away. Cause there's just road and there's nothing else going on. So we start walking and, like, he's like, all right, well, here's one spot where a couple saw something cross the road and they were really shaken by it. And so I'm videoing it. We keep going and we just keep walking the trail. Then all of a sudden we see, like, a strange little thing in the creek that could be, like, you know, like a rock that was sitting kind of weird. And, you know, and I'm kind of, like, mentally wanting something to happen, you know, but, like, also I'm like, this is just awesome. And then the other part of me, though, is like, well, I'm in the woods with this guy I've never met. And I've brought my wife into the a state park, you know, with no weapon, no friends, no nothing. So we keep walking. And before you know it, we are, I would say, probably 45 minutes into the state park, right? Like, we've walked this far. We just keep walking. And he's talking, and we start talking about just other stuff, and we're kind of looking around. So about 45 minutes into walking into a dense state park that is nothing else around, we look and we see it was about, I would estimate, about 150 trees, like small branch trees, had been broken off about 7 to 8 feet high. You know, I'm 6'1". So when we were walking around, it was about a foot over my head, and it looked, and I'm God's honest truth, like, it looked like someone had taken the branches and twisted them and then laid them over. Right. So we get into this spot and we see all these branches laid over, and I don't know what it is. I thought it was like a mini tornado had touched down in this area, like, not thinking, right? Yeah. And then, so I'm like, well, what is this, Steve? And then all of a sudden, Steve, you could just kind of tell, like, something, like, his eyes kind of glazed. And then he takes out his phone. And it's, so he, like, he feels something has happened there. Right. So he's starting a video too. Like, all of a sudden we've got three video cameras going and we're all looking around like, oh, what is, so we're looking, and I'm looking at the brakes and just amazed at, like, man, this is cool. Cause it's, like, right in the middle of a dense forest. All the other trees are okay, but it's like this circle just looks like it's the limbs are broken, but they're not, like, laying on the ground. They're still attached to the tree and stuff like that. So my wife, who is a bigger skeptic than I am, who at the time was like, I'm just going because I love you, and can we please stop at a TJ Maxx on the way home? That was her involvement, right? So she, all of a sudden, she's kind of excited. She's like, well, what is this? What could this be? And she starts looking around. We're all kind of going in three different spots. We're just looking around kind of amazed. And then Laura, the biggest skeptic of the group, all of a sudden says, Woody, come over here. I need to show you something. And I'm in the zone, right? Like, I am like, honey, okay, that's fine. We see everything. This, Woody, I found a footprint. Okay. So all of a sudden, Steve and I start running over to her. And sure enough, like, this is the truth. Like, we walk up to one of the branches that had been snapped. Okay. And at the base of that tree, and we measured it after the fact. there was like a 20-inch footprint. Okay. And it had the heel indentation. It had everything that made, like, it was clearly a footprint. And so at first I'm like, unless Shaquille O'Neal was walking around barefoot in the woods, what could have caused this? And so I, like, Steve automatically is like measuring, putting for scale, taking pictures. Exactly. That exactly. That is exactly what it looked like. So I'm kind of low key freaking out, right? I'm super excited at this point. And then, so I've got my camera. Steve's got his camera. He's taking out like a dollar bill, doing the scale. And also, like, we didn't bring any gear with us because we didn't think we'd see anything. So Steve didn't have his casting kit with him, right? It was back in the car. And so I'm excited. We're looking. Laura keeps walking around. And she's like, guys, I found another one. There's another one, like diagonal up a couple of trees. So now we're looking at the base of all these trees, and they're legitimately 20 to 22 inches long. And I mean, 6 inches wide, whatever. And I'm geeking out this moment. All right. So Steve, we make a decision. Steve's like, all right, we need to cast this. Like, these are really good prints. We need to take a cast. He's like, but the casting kit is back in my expedition. So he's like, I got to hike back and come back. So who wants to stay with the footprint just to make sure it doesn't get disturbed? So Laura and I stay there. All of a sudden, Steve goes back the way we came, right? So he's walking, he's hiking back past the wooded snapped area, the footprints, everything.
But didn't you said it was like 45 minutes though? Wasn't it like
it was 45 minutes. So he had a 45 minute walk back and back. So he was going to be gone for about an hour and a half. Right. So we have a seat there beside the footprint so that we didn't lose it. So we didn't want to walk anymore. Cause heck, we were already deep into the state park. So Steve he starts walking back and we see him walk the trail the opposite way. So we're sitting there with a footprint and just kind of taking it in, right? I'm kind of like just sitting there thinking about, man, if this is a Bigfoot footprint, this is awesome. If it's not, what else could it be? And then we both at the same time start smelling something, right? So, And again, I'm telling you, I before this, every show I laughed at. Like, I love Bigfoot. I put him in my commercials. I have a costume. Like, I'm a fan. But the shows just were like, man, I don't believe it. Well, I smell a horrid smell. Right? I'm like, what is that? Just skunk, sewage, methane, like something is just funky walking around us. And we both at the same time, we feel something in the wood line, and we can kind of follow this scent going around in front of us. And so I'm of course freaking out, and I have a camcorder with me, a 4K camcorder. So I'm trying to get footage because in my mind I'm like, I cuss at everybody that has blurry footage, right? I'm like, how can you do that? And now today this is horrible. Everybody has cameras, like, and I have a 4K camera, and I'm trying to get a clear shot of whatever could be out there, right? And I can't do it. One, I'm shaking, but two, I couldn't do it. And then so this smell kind of trails off, right? And we're like, okay, it's gone. I don't feel like something's right on top of us anymore. That feeling is gone. I didn't really see anything, but I just had a gut feeling. And then sure enough, like up on the mountain, like up on the ridge, I maybe a football field or two away, all of a sudden we start hearing wood knocks, like the type that you hear in the TV show, the wood knocks on the tree. And so I take up a branch and I start knocking on trees myself. Cause I'm like, well, what is this? And then that happened for, I would say, the better part of while Steve was hiking back the other way. So then I hear the wood knocks, I wood knock back, and then it gets quiet, right? It gets quiet. We're just kind of sitting there and I'm like, what else is next? And then about that time, Steve is coming from the opposite direction back with his casting kit. So he's coming back and we're explaining to him, like, you know, is anybody else here? Like, could there be, no one else is there. He hasn't passed anybody on the trail. He hasn't seen any other cars. And that stuff was happening even in front of us. And he came from behind us. So we cast the footprint. He gets a pretty good cast and we have to hike back. So now I'm hiking back with this, I don't know how heavy this footprint is. Like, I'm trying not to break it, right? And then on the way back, so this is like, if it's coincidental, it's pretty amazing to me. So he had hiked up and didn't see anything, right? On the way back, and granted, like, he's gone, we've come up, he's gone back, come up, and now we're all going back. We pass a dead animal on side of the trail on the way back to the car that wasn't there on the way up here and wasn't there when he came back through. So I can't explain that event. I can't explain everything on it, but I do know when I left, I no longer was the skeptic that I was before. And now it's like, I really am more attentive when going out, going in the woods, because not only did we see two footprints, I mean, there was nobody out there, and it had just rained, and it's just, the conditions were right. Wasn't like, you know, and then the dead animal, the smell, and the wood knocks, it hit every check mark for like an encounter, but we didn't see anything. Right. But I felt something was there. So ever since that day, I have had my Bigfoot enthusiasm has grown ever since then.
So what about, like, tell me a little bit about how you and your wife felt during the time that all this stuff was happening. You're out there alone, you know, he's gone to get the casting kit and all these things are happening. I mean, what was the level of anxiety? I'm sure there was a level of curiousness and, hey, this is cool. But there's got to be a level of, hey, this is kind of scary at the same time, because we don't know what's going to happen next.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we were sitting on the log, right? I had to bring myself down a little bit, because we were, like you said, like, the excitement was there, but it was also like, I don't know what's in the woods. I have a legitimate feeling right now and I'm not bragging or anything, but I really don't scare easy. Like, I don't, like, I'll go into a house, like, you know, an abandoned house in a heartbeat with the camera. I'll walk down a dark alley. Like, I love, like, going around corners. Like, this legitimately had me, like, I don't know what's in the woods and I know something's there. And even though my emotions were high, I would say my gut didn't lie to me. My gut was like, you need to kind of, like, what is that in the woods? Like, look over here type of thing. Like, and I literally felt a presence in the woods. Like, I felt there was something, Bigfoot, a bear or something. Like, there was something huge walking around us. And I don't want to say stalking, but in a way I felt we were being watched and not the ones watching it. Like, I felt like we were being watched. And we were both anxious. Like, as a husband and, you know, everything, I felt like I've drugged my wife into the middle of nowhere. I don't know our tour guy, but he's a nice guy, but I don't know this guy. He could leave us here. And I don't know what's in the woods, and I don't have a weapon. I didn't come prepared. Heck, I didn't even come in hiking shoes. I didn't come with anything. And so I would say after my emotions were in check and my excitement level kind of I brought it down a little bit, I was in a very, very weird place. I was like, okay, what's happening? What am I really sensing? What am I really smelling? And I couldn't explain it. And that made me, for the first time, I was like, I'm going to sit here and just kind of shake my hands a little bit, because it was very anxious.
What do you think the purpose is of them bending those trees over like that? I mean, just a stretch of, it's not like they took them to build something with. They were leaving them attached to the trees.
You know, the way Steve explained it, like, I wondered the same thing. I was like, could it have been like a isolated tornado, you know? But there was nothing else moved. There was nothing, you know? And the way he explained it, which it made sense, it was like it could have been, if you believe in Bigfoot, it could have been a young one playing, running around, playing, snapping branches, stuff like that. Like it was almost like this wasn't an adult. This is how he kind of explained it. It wasn't an adult. It was more of a youthful. That's just what they were doing. Just playing, you know, snapping branches. And now I have seen since then, I've gone to other isolated wooded locations where people have heard noises and they've never seen anything, but heard noises. And I've gone to them. And now that I kind of look, I do see some broken branches. And I even one location actually had a very rustic structure made. It actually had a bunch of the branches had been broken off and then made into, like a teepee type of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I really try to look for that. If someone, you know, when I have about 5 trail cams now. So if somebody calls and says, "Hey, I'm hearing something," I have a sense that, you know, usually it's a bear because there's a lot of bears in our area, but for the very isolated locations, honestly, I've noticed the branches cracked now and I've noticed these structures. So I don't know. I would believe I kind of, after Steve had explained what he thought it was, it kind of made sense that it could be something just, that's the way they just kind of hop around and play around, or it was angry. And that's the way it kind of like exerted some, you know, some of the aggression out.
You know, they, a lot of times with these Bigfoot sightings or other cryptids of that nature, people will talk about that everything gets extremely quiet in the woods at the time that they're there. Did you notice any of that, that there was a bunch of regular wood type noises, birds and other animals and stuff like that?
Oh, that's absolutely right. It was the most eerie thing, because I mean, now I do want to say a disclaimer. I mean, I was very excited. Like I was very, I went to a level, you know, 11 really quickly, but again, I had a video camera too, cause I wanted to document how I felt. Not that we knew anything was going to happen, but I also wanted to create a video, you know, coming out my day at the museum. And it was the most eerie feeling, quiet, no birds, no nothing, no other footprints. No, I didn't even hear the footprints of what I thought was in the wood line, like the smell. I didn't hear something walking, but I knew something was there. But we were in a very, very dense state park, and I couldn't, nothing else. That was it. It's the hardest thing to explain, because again, when I would watch shows or hear stories, like, you know, you want to believe in the sounds that they are telling the truth. And it's like, okay, all right, well, it could be this, it could be that. And then actually after experiencing it firsthand, like I have a whole new appreciation for people's stories now, because it's like, I do now take them, not that I didn't believe them before, but like I do now, like I know the feeling. I know how you're feeling, that you think you're crazy or you think people are not going to believe you, but, or that it was quiet and you smelt this horrible smell that everybody talks about. And then the wood knocks, of all things to happen, and the wood knocks. And then again, it could be complete coincidence, but on the way out to see a dead animal right by the trail that we didn't see for 3 trips, it just kind of unsettled me. Right. But we didn't hear any deer walking in the woods anyway, but there's one right by the trail all of a sudden. So the weirdest, most exciting, amazing experience, one of that I've ever had. Like it had every emotion and every roller coaster.
Now you said that your level of excitement on Bigfoot has raised since then. What about your wife? She was the bigger skeptic. Does she have any more interest now that she's been an experience, or is it like, that was an experience, but I'd still rather go to TJ Maxx and don't care?
Well, TJ Maxx, yes, absolutely. That hasn't changed at all. But no, yes, her excitement has grown too. And so much so that, and this is where I felt the need to change our name too, because I do my day job is I own a marketing and video production company, right? So I make a lot of the cheesy local commercials you see for car dealers and stuff like that. So much so that I bought my own Bigfoot costume to put in the commercials and to do marketing, because I was absorbed, like just fascinated. And I even incorporated him into my company logo on the side of my Jeep. I have it wrapped. And so it's all like my studio now has become the Bigfoot thing in the area. And we, you know, it was right around the pandemic. So everything kind of like was weird for a while. So we really couldn't go anywhere. Like no places were open or whatever. But my wife, yeah, she's team Bigfoot too now. Like it really was one, you look back at things that happen that change the course of your hobbies, your interest, and your passions. And that day was one of the ones that was a switch. It kind of flipped. I've had a couple of them in my life that I can remember. And that was one that just gave me the bug and gave her the bug and kind of gave her a little bit of insight to why I like the discovery part of it, even if we'd have gone to the woods and nothing had happened. But the fact that we did, something actually happened, which doesn't happen to a lot of people, it changed both of our outlook. Now we're always up for an adventure now. Like, I mean, somebody calls and like, hey, you want to go do this? I've packed a camera and we've gone hiking in the middle of the woods to a cemetery that people hear noises at. Like we keep going, you know, so anybody calls like, hey, you want to go do this? I go no matter what now, like no matter what, because
nice.
You just don't know. You just don't know.
So you were telling me before we started recording, you had a couple of instances. The Bigfoot situation was one of them.
Yep.
There was another one you told me, and I've already forgot what it was, but you said there was something you've done since then that was pretty cool. Can you refresh my memory?
Yeah. Yes. All right. So in our area of Lynchburg, Virginia, and anybody listening to this, you can Google this, right? We've had this legend called the Rocking Cradle House.
That's
and
right.
This is a house that is in the historic part of our city. And it's at the end of one of these, just, you know, it's like one of these web of streets. It's at the end of the street, but it's always been this legend of something that happened there. It involved a cradle, right? So the story was that back in the day, there was this pastor who him and his wife had a baby, and they were going to church that night, and the babysitter came over. Okay. Babysitter was watching the baby, and she put the baby down in the cradle, and the cradle wouldn't stop rocking. So she took the baby out, cradle wouldn't stop rocking. And it totally messed with the nanny. So the nanny actually went outside and sat on the porch waiting for the pastor to come home. And she told him the cradle won't stop rocking, right? So the pastor goes in and he has to command the cradle to stop rocking. So he actually, so much so that he commands it at this point to rock and not to rock. And he's basically controlling the cradle without touching it, right? So this became like this thing, like people would actually, you know, gathered around the house and they saw it for themselves. The cradle was rocking. And so much so that they even supposedly cut off the legs of the cradle at one point to make it stop, but it kept trying to move and just this very eerie story, right? So this has kind of been circulating in this area. Well, during COVID, a local magazine they were looking for an article to do of local lore and legends. And they contacted me and they said, what do you know about the Rocking Cradle House? And I was like, listen, I've read about the story for like ever since I was a kid. It's amazing. I've always wanted to kind of see the house, go in there, find out more. This would be a good excuse if you want. And I'm a photographer, so I'll go take some pictures of the house for the magazine and you can kind of ask me questions, whatever. So they asked me questions. We get the story and I was like, all right, I'm gonna go to the house one day and just take pictures. So I pull up and this house too, keep in mind that everybody sort of knows about the house. So when someone buys it, like they typically don't stay long for some reason. Like it really is like it's gone into foreclosure. I don't know how many times it's changed hands a ton. There's been rentals in there. They've moved. Owners have left it abandoned, whatever. It's just had this cycle of just never, no one's ever settled down in it. So I pull up and I see a dumpster in the driveway and there's this one guy like working on it. He's like cleaning out one of the rooms or something. And so I just walk up to him and I'm like, listen, this is going to sound really weird. I don't know if you've heard the stories of this house. And he interrupted me and he was like, I absolutely have. And I have stuff happen to me all the time while I'm working here. He's like, what do you want to know? I was like, oh, you're the man I want to talk to. I was like, I just want to take some pictures. I just want to walk around. I've never been in the house. I've heard about it, read about it. He's like, I'll tell you what, this house has just gone into foreclosure again. So I'm cleaning out. I'm going to take this load to the dump. You can do whatever you want to. I'm done for the day. And so I'm geeking out, right? So all of a sudden I don't have anybody to worry about. And he leaves and then I'm left with the house, right? He's like, just lock a door behind you. I'll be back tomorrow to finish cleaning up. He's like, just be careful. Cause I've seen stuff in the mirror when I've walked through the rooms and it is super creepy. I was like, all right, thanks, man. I appreciate it. And again, I don't really scare easy. Like I really don't like it's this stuff really doesn't, it didn't bother me too much. So I walk in the house and I start taking pictures. Well, the first thing I notice in the living room, when you first walk in, every wall of the house had a picture of Jesus on the wall or a cross. Okay. Every wall, every single wall. I was like, this is it's so odd. Like I'm a Christian and I know, like, I like my, you know, but like this house, literally every, you know,
yeah, a little overkill.
It was a lot. All right. It was a lot. So I'm like, man, this is weird. It's a church or something. So I'm walking through and I'm taking pictures of it. And I have a surreal feeling, but I wasn't, you know, I was like, oh, this is a cute house. I can't wait for them to remodel it. It's going to look great. So then I go upstairs and I actually find the room where the legend started, the actual rocking cradle where the baby's room was and the spot where the cradle was and the spot where her chair was. Okay. So I walk in there and for the first time, like in the whole paranormal experience, whatever, I got physically ill. Like I got physically sick being in that room. And I was excited before, but I wasn't expecting anything like the Bigfoot thing. Like that got me excited, but I, like, you know, this, I felt like I was really going to throw up everywhere. So I take pictures and I'm like, I got to go. Like I got to get some air. I can't shake it. So I go outside and I'm just kind of like just getting some fresh air. I feel better. Like I'm like, okay, all right. So maybe it was just the room. Maybe it was. Okay. All right. So then I'm like, all right, I got some good pictures. I'm good up there, I think. Like, and so let me go in the basement of all places, like an idiot, right?
Yeah, that's a good place to go.
Yeah, that's a good place to go alone again, like, you know, in the basement. So yeah,
happens in basements or national parks.
No, nothing at all. So if you ever go with me on an adventure, you might not, like, you might want to hang back because I don't think I lead very well, okay? So I'm walking around the house trying to find the basement door because this is an old house. Like, it didn't have the staircase to the basement. You had to go out and in. So I find the door and I'm going down there. There's no lights. So I take my camera out. All I've got, again, I'm the most unprepared guy, but I have a camera. So I'm trying to find my way around. And I kid you not. So I'm looking around and then I'm looking. All of a sudden up, I don't even know what to call it. It's like a crawl space. Like, it's like in the basement. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's where they store stuff. I'm looking around and I've got night vision on the camera. It's got infrared. So that's how I'm seeing, right? And I'm looking up and then on the ledge, I see a cradle, right? So all of a sudden I just have this wave of like, oh God, what is it? Is the legend real? Is this like, I found the cradle hidden in the basement. I was upstairs about to throw up everywhere. Like I don't know what to think. So that was kind of my cue. I was like, all right, I think you're good, Woody. I think you got some good pictures. So I get out and I go to the car and I have to sit there for about 30 minutes. Like, I'm just like sick. I'm just like, I don't know whether it was excitement. I don't know whether but that was probably the most intense paranormal experience I've had without having an experience. I didn't see anything. I didn't sense anything. I just got just sick. And then after that, I was totally fine. Like it's hard to explain, but then the article came out and the pictures were in the magazine, and then not publicly, right? This didn't happen publicly, but on the back end, I started getting text messages about how the cradle that I saw, they don't know if it's the real cradle. I was like, okay, well, that's good. That makes me feel better. They're like, but we know where the real cradle is. I was like, well, how do you know if it's got the real cradle? They said, because it's got saw marks on the legs and the family can trace it back. So the real cradle does exist. And it actually had saw marks on the bottom where they were going to cut the legs off. And supposedly, this is story to story, that it has passed from house to house because it has caused great strife in the families and marriages of the houses it's been in. So they have finally donated it to the museum now to get it out of the house because the family was, it just was, it was, they felt the negative energy. They got rid of it and they're fine. So that is the story as told to me. And that I would believe it. If it had that feeling that when I walked in that house, if that cradle carried that feeling, like I would believe it. I never saw, I mean, you know, they haven't seen it rock or anything, but it was probably one of my top experiences because I've been reading about this house forever, and to finally go in it alone, to see it, to before it gets remodeled, before it's yet again, you know, it was in its fairly like original state this time before the developer has since gone in and painted and everything else. That was a surreal feeling. Like that was a very, I don't know that I'd want to feel it again, but I, you know, it was cool to go to a local legend and actually have something, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, and you say to not have an actual paranormal experience, but there's a lot of people that would say that having nausea at some of these places is a paranormal experience because it's a common occurrence at some locations.
Huh?
Because at Bobby Mackey's, for example, there's a corner where a lot of people experience nausea. And then some people said it might have to do with ley lines. It could have to do with the magnetic appeal that the area has, a combination of all of that together. But, I can't think of the name of it right off the bat. There's a tomb over in England to where the gentleman that was responsible for the deaths of a lot of people, he was like one of the leaders over there, and he was persecuting, I can't remember what religion it was, but he was responsible for killing a lot of them. And in his tomb, there was a homeless gentleman that fell through, was going to try to find a place to sleep, and he was getting in there to go get out of the rain, and he actually fell through the floor, and there was some bodies and stuff underneath there. But that tomb, whenever somebody visits there, they have a lot of experience of nausea over there. So that's one of the common experiences when they do ghost tours there. So I would say that could be paranormal.
Yeah. Well, maybe I have had my my one and only paranormal experience that I don't know. I would like to experience Bigfoot again, but I don't know about that. I don't know that I can handle the paranormal, too many of those experiences because that rocked me a little bit. That actually kept me up for the first time and I'm the type, I'll watch horror movies before I'll fall asleep to them. You know, like I love watching like Friday the 13th when I'm going to sleep. I just love, but that one mess me up for about 2 days. Like that one, I can't explain it.
What do you tell the listeners out there about Fright Chasers? If they tune in, what are they going to get?
You're going to get a good idea of what my personality is like. It's all over the place. So if you listen to the Fright Chasers podcast, we have a couple of different elements. So there are consistent episodes such as like News from the Beyond, and that's a weekly episode. It runs about 20 minutes and I just cover kind of the odd headlines that I find that really aren't reported, that are kind of weird, that are like a ghost story in a pub, or that someone has new Bigfoot footage and stuff like that. We cover that. I cover that every week. And occasionally we do have a hotline set up. It's a 24/7 recorded line. Nobody picks up. It's called our haunted hotline. It's 701 haunted. If you call that and just leave us a message of your story, whatever, usually that makes its way into a podcast episode. And so you'll occasionally see episodes of that. And we do have interviews and stories on there. So the Fright Chasers podcast is, it's a little all over the board. If you kind of like an eclectic mix of just odd and weird and me talking about some fun stuff. And I also give updates to, I own a short film company, and we produce like short horror movies, like B movies, like just low budget, no budget films. We talk about some of the stuff that we have going on, some of the mini productions we have, and just kind of a glimpse into that kind of fun little bubble world I live in.
Let's talk about that real quick before we get out of here. So
yeah,
you produce these little movies. How do they come about? For example, are these your ideas? Is it somebody comes to you and says, "Hey, Woody, I've got an idea." And you say, "Well, this is what we could do with it." How do most of these come about?
Well, for, all right, so the production company is called Thrasher's Lake Entertainment, right? And Thrasher's Lake comes from the lake that I grew up on. It's not, and it's not a big swimming lake. Okay. It's not, it's like a reservoir. It's like a county reservoir. And the county came in the '70s, purchased the land from my family. And my great grandparents' house was actually in the middle of where the lake is now. And so we grew up around the lake, and I walked down there, come up with all these just weird stories that happened, and nothing happened at the lake, but it just in my mind, it did. So that kind of always stuck with me. Well, then we started this podcast, and I started getting phone calls on the haunted hotline, and I started interviewing people and getting stories. So I really, most of the stories come from the haunted hotline and the calls and the interviews I've had. Like our short films have been inspired by a phone call. Like we had one phone call where a person called, they were on a lake, and this was an actual story. They were on a lake and they saw these red eyes on the edge of the lake, and they went to explore, and it supposedly this girl had died in a well on that property, and this and that. And so that led it into a short film that inspired us. And I'm actually working with three local filmmakers that are very young, right out of college. And we're producing like an anthology. And what they've done is they've listened to the podcast. They've picked their favorite haunted hotline story that has then inspired them to make a 5 to 10 minute short film. So really it comes from the podcast, and it comes from my warped, like, man, this, I think this could happen at the lake. I think, you know, some just weird. And plus, like, I love slasher movies. Like I said, like Halloween, Friday 13th. So I'm always kind of pulling from that old school vibe from it, but it's fun. It's cause I love the shoestring budget. I love, you know, I'm not formally trained. I picked up a camera. I didn't go to school for it, and have just been blessed in you know, my commercial career. And now I'm kind of segueing it into mini productions and just kind of having fun in the area. So really, I have to credit the Haunted Hotline for probably 75% of our stories.
So what's the next step once you get these shorts made? I mean, then what? I mean, they obviously you don't make them just to sit in your in your studio. I mean, what's the next step then? Is it trying to get them published somewhere? Is it trying to get them to an awards show? Or, you know, what's the next step in your field?
Yep. Well, you know, I have a pretty good relationship with the local academy here, the one that we did the haunted history tours for the last couple of years. And we're actually sponsoring an event coming up in October. It's on October 28th and 29th. It's called Slasher Weekend, right? So we're Thrasher's Lake Entertainment is the title sponsor. And we're doing on Friday night, they're playing the original Friday the 13th and then the remake of Friday the 13th. Then Saturday, they're playing the original Nightmare on Elm Street, then the remake, and then the original Candyman, and then the new one. And then they're having a big party. So we're sponsoring that. We're actually doing the short. We're creating like these short vignettes in between the movies. Like you remember Joe Bob Briggs, like stuff like that. Yeah. Does like trivia. Yeah. So we're doing stuff like that for it. Like I'm even going old school. We're doing an old 3D anaglyph segment where we're going to hand out red and blue glasses to the crowd. And so my goal is to help expose some local filmmakers with a relationship like that and show it locally and just give a venue so that we can just have fun. Like, honestly, and I've done a few and submitted to online film festivals, and that's fun. But honestly, my ultimate goal is just to create, and sometimes 20 people will watch it, and other times a lot of people will watch it. But I just kind of want to make a hub of people like me that I feel like are out there that really have no budget, that are, you know, may not have gone to some expensive film school and have a $40,000 camera. They went to Amazon and saved up like I did, bought a camera and have fun. That's what I want. And I'm actually casting for my slasher film that I'm doing now. And that my goal there is to have a premiere at the Academy around the same time and just get it out there, have some fun, and hopefully people will see it. You never know, but I tell you what, with the demand for content these days, I think that, you know, if you put something out there and it's entertaining, I think people will eventually see it. Hopefully that's the goal.
Nice. How can they keep up with Fright Chasers and everything that Woody's got going on with Thrashers?
Well, if you go to thrasherslake.com, that has our kind of our fun productions, and we even have our zombie. We did a pilot for a TV show called Grime Scene Z11. That is, all right, so if you can imagine, it's a cross between zombies, Reno 911, and Cops and The Office, right? So we kind of blended all those. So I would love for people to go there and watch that, because we had a great time filming it. But if you go to thrasherslake.com, you can see the productions, and we have Fright Chasers on there. Or if you go to frightchasers.com, you'll find the podcast. You'll find links to news from the beyond. And just real quick, you'll also find, I do this other podcast where it's a more serious podcast, but it's called Bigfoot Classified. It's where I actually explore in a true crime way conspiracy theories surrounding Bigfoot. But I do it from a true crime way. Like we covered the first season, I covered the Mount St. Helens eruption and the conspiracy theories around government hiding that there were, you know, Bigfoot up there. And then the Battle Mountain Complex fires in Nevada. That's the second season. And I'm working on the third season. But if you're in the mood for something fun and goofy, Fright Chasers is the way. If you like true crime and you kind of want to learn about Sasquatch, then Bigfoot Classified would be a good one to kind of listen to as well. That was a little bit more serious though. You won't hear me laugh on that one.
Woody, it's been awesome having you on, brother. It's been too long.
Yeah, I know it. Thank you. Yeah. I love catching up. Y'all do amazing. I'm a fan of the podcast, fan of your studio too. So I appreciate you having me back.
All right, brother. Well, I'll talk to you soon. We'll have to get together and do an event together or something.
Absolutely. I'm game whenever you are.
You're not taking me to the woods though. I'm just telling you.
Don't let me lead you, please.
Tracy wouldn't allow it anyway. She don't like to go into the woods, period. It don't even if you can see the road from where we're at, she don't like to be in there. So
yeah. Well, especially after she listens to me on this, she'll never want Woody around anywhere.
Absolutely. All right, brother. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. That wraps it up from us for this week. We love you guys. We appreciate you. And we'll be back next week.
Y'all have a blessed week. Take care. We love you.